welcome to the Frequency 49 show. I'm Paul MacDonald, alongside Brian Davis and Deepak Gohill. Hello, gents.
Hello.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Not bad at all. Gary is back from his trip to the States, but with jet lag, time difference, and the fact that he's a big girl's blouse, he's taken the opportunity to get some much-needed rest. So I'm delighted to introduce this week's guest co-host, James Little. Welcome to the show, James.
Hi, guys.
Welcome aboard, James. It's good to have you.
Thank you. Can't wait to get going.
Great to have you with us today for the show. The San Francisco 49ers went into Soldier Field, looking to build on a decent performance in the home loss to the Arizona Cardinals in Week 12. It didn't start promisingly, though, with negative yardage and then going down to a field goal on the Bears' opening drive. After that, Jay Cutler remembered what he does best and threw a pick six to Jimmy Ward, who ran it in with significant flourish. The crowd gave him a 5.8 for style. Not to be outdone, Gabbert got in on the act himself, scoring touchdowns, that is, when he played Moses and part of the defense, giving him the space for a 44-yard rushing touchdown. The game stayed close right through to overtime until our hero, Blaine Gabbert, threw a perfect 50-yard pass to an otherwise anonymous Torrey Smith, who ran it in another 20 yards for the game-winning TD, looking like the Statue of Liberty, while fans around the world were screaming, "Get both hands on it, you Muppets!" And Jed decided that a road win was the perfect time to get back on Twitter and become accountable again by tweeting, "Very fun win." To be fair, the crayons were quite big and it's all he could fit on Trent Baalke's bald patch. What did you think of the game, Deepak?
What did I think? Well, I think the most important thing is that we won this game. The manner of, in the way that we won it in overtime and all the craziness that happened. Don't forget, Chicago were missing extra points. They missed field goals. But I actually think, Blaine Gabbert, good for you. You know, I think you deserve the respect of a competent NFL QB. You're not a laughingstock anymore. You made some big plays in the clutch, and you came through when the team needed you. Very happy, buddy. And I'm not one of those people who's playing for draft choices. I want our guys to win every single game. So I am absolutely delighted we managed to pull this one out.
His stats weren't anything sort of impressive in this week's game. 18 of 32 for 196 yards. But Brian, stats don't tell this story, the story of this game, do they?
No, not at all. He came good when it counted. And that's all that really matters, really. That's all you can really say about him. It wasn't a particularly great game. I was actually quite surprised by how low his passing numbers were when I actually sat down and looked at the box score after the game from watching it. But those two plays at the end of the fourth quarter and in overtime were good enough to win any game of football. I don't care who made those plays. They were both absolutely fantastic plays.
And the pass to Torrey Smith in overtime was an absolutely beautiful pass, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, when I saw it, I was like, oh, it's going out of bounds. And then it was. He just caught it. He went, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I didn't know Gabbert could throw a ball like that. I mean, I wasn't very confident with him coming in a few weeks back. And to now, it's just a totally different. I was more with let's lose to get draft picks, but not now. I want to win every game. I mean, I should have been like that before, perhaps. But, I mean, I agree with Deepak. He's competent. I don't think he's getting the respect he deserves at all. I mean, since the game, I've watched and listened to various NFL coverage, and none of them are actually particularly giving him the credit he deserves for completely turning around and winning the game for us. Okay, he didn't do it single-handedly, but he did a lot. Like I said, the two plays were good enough to win any game. And I think if he'd have done that for another team, then perhaps they'd have highlighted it more, probably a team with a better record than what we've got at the moment. But yeah, I was just astounded. I couldn't believe it.
I think that touchdown run will be a play that we talk about for years to come. That, you know, the way that he just seemed to part the defense. I think that they all thought he was going to slide and get the first down, and they just kind of let him through, and it was amazing to see. And I do genuinely think we will, you know, we will talk about that touchdown for years to come, and you know, we'll all remember where we were on that day. And he's been strong in all four of his starts. You know, he's completed 66.7% of his passes. I think it's an average of about 7.5 yards per attempt. And his pass rating is just shy of 86, you know, and he averages 7.4 yards per run as well. He definitely deserves, you know, a lot of good publicity and good press.
Yeah, I think the difference from what I can see is when he runs with the ball. I mean, when I used to watch Kaepernick rush with the ball, he used to look frantic and just he could go left, he could go right. He never knew. But I think when I can see Gabbert, we just it's just the way he carries the ball. For some reason, I don't think he was ever really been associated as a rushing quarterback. But when he's rushing, he just looks so confident with it. And I don't feel if he gets hit, he's going to lose it. Okay, you know, we might see if he carries on doing it, then he gets it. He'll get hit more. Like Cap at first when he started running, looked great, but later on he just looked like he was scrambling around panicking. I think just Blaine to me looks like he's got, when he's rushing, he knows where he's going and he's very athletic as well. Again, something else I don't think he's getting credit for is his athleticism and how quick he can actually move. He's quite a tall bloke as well. He's a big lad.
Yeah.
That's all I think on him at the minute.
And I also think it's worth noting here that, as Brian said, he's made four solid starts. Now, if we cast our minds back to before he started, we really did need some sort of level of quarterback play that was consistent, you know, that was going to play high percentage football, that was going to be these swing passes and look for the open man in the flat. And Gabbert's done that, you know, and if we remember, and I hate calling it game management, but that was the track that set Alex Smith on to almost guiding us within a concussion away from being a Super Bowl QB, okay? So, you know, you have to give Gabbert a lot of credit here because he's made plays with his legs. He's aired the football out, but he's also making plays with his head too. And he's extending plays. He's not afraid to rush. He knows when to slide. You know, he's an intelligent football player. I think all the time he spent on the sidelines observing and watching film is paying dividend. And I'll go ahead and say this. I'm going to make a very bold statement here. I still think his best is yet to come. I still think he's got more. He's got more that he's going to show us this season.
Yeah, we need to look at him in a completely different light now. This isn't Blaine Gabbert of the Jacksonville Jaguars anymore. This is a clean slate. He's sat down, he's obviously developed with the 49ers, and like Deepak said there, studying film, spending time on the sideline and watching football, because he was in no fit state, similar to what Alex Smith was in his first season with the 49ers. He just wasn't an NFL-ready quarterback at that point, and now he is the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers. And he does have faults, you know. There were passes that he did leave out there, and I do think that with a competent O-line, he will only get better. And this does very much remind me of the period under Alex Smith, where, you know, what we saw what Alex Smith could do when he was given protections, receivers and consistent coordinators and coaching.
Something I wanted to ask all of you with regards to Blaine Gabbert, and if you remember back to the start of the season when we had Kaepernick announced as the starting QB and Blaine Gabbert was his backup, he was soundly beaten as being the worst QB in the history of the NFL. We are not seeing that now. So is it literally that he just wasn't ready when he was the QB in the Jacksonville Jaguars? Or is it that he was a decent QB behind a woeful team and now we're seeing what he's like? Can you say that the 49ers aren't a woeful team? But, you know, we must be better than what he had down in Jacksonville. Is it simply a case that he's got a better team around him?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I just touched on there. You know, we need to look past that time in Jacksonville now, and we need to look at what also happened with Alex Smith in that first season or two under in the 49ers team, where he just wasn't an NFL-ready quarterback. You know, Gabbert's now had the time to sit down, study film, get coaching. Maybe not the best coaching right now in the San Francisco 49ers organization, but let's not forget, he was the backup when Jim Harbaugh was here, you know, a quarterback's coach. So I do believe that this is a completely different guy now. And we do need to, he does need to shake off that tag of that team in the same way that Alex Smith has shaken off the tag of that terrible 49ers quarterback when we were an absolutely dreadful franchise who would have probably lost to some college teams. That goes the same for the Jacksonville Jaguars of recent years. They were absolutely pitiful, but now you're starting to see that the progress is being made by that team, and maybe another season or two, the Jacksonville Jaguars could be a playoff team.
He is kind of putting this team on his shoulders now, isn't he? He's not just a quarterback. He's becoming a leader. The 44-yard touchdown run that he had, it's the longest run of the season, not just for a quarterback, but for a 49er this season. That's the signs of a leader in this offense, isn't it?
Well, the signs of a leader actually go beyond things the stats can measure. And we talked about this with Kaepernick. intangibles. So, you know, respect for his teammates. How well does he understand the game? How well does he understand the system that he's playing in? How well does he understand his opponent's system? And I think when you combine a lot of different variables together that you can't have your standard set of statistics for, then you're looking into leadership territory. And leadership basically means the man next to you can look at you and think, I know this guy's going to step up and I know he's going to put it out there and do his very, very best. That is leadership. And I think, yeah, Blaine Gabbert rightly should be looked upon as a leader. You know, don't forget, he won this game in the clutch. This wasn't just a regular season, a regular normal game without overtime, without different drama, because shortly after he'd scored his touchdown, Chicago almost ran it in back into the end zone. That can deflate a team completely. So for him to remain his composure, stay calm, and literally say, I got this, inspires his teammates to think, yeah, we trust this fella. And to me, that is a leader. And he has demonstrated much needed and much missing leadership on the offensive side of the ball. We've always had really good, strong leaders on the defense. I think it's about time, you know, apart from Anakin Bolden, that we've actually got somebody in the offense that people can look up to and say, this guy can lead us.
I think also, I think the guys, well, the wide receivers, certainly, they're not, I mean, Anquan Bolden got a bit frustrated a bit at one point last night, but they know that this guy's not going to throw it away as much as I think they did with Cap. He looks like he knows when to get rid of the ball, and he knows, he's just cooler, calmer in the pocket, even when he comes out. I just think they trust him more. And I've also, just at lunchtime today, looking at some of the videos online, Bowman completely come up to him in the locker room, just singled him out. And I don't think I saw that so much with Cap. And obviously Bowman's our natural leader on the defense and probably the leader of the team, really. And Gabbert, I think, is getting he's the leader of our offense. And they're all trusting. And I can see something. I think we're going to finish strong. I hope we are. But I think we're going to finish strong. I'm quite, after last night, I think they're looking a lot more like a team and a collective. As opposed to individuals, which there have been at times, certainly with Cap.
We could spend at least an hour talking just about Blaine Gabbert in this game, but there was an entire team out there. So let's talk about some of the other players on the team. We've had loads of questions in and loads of comments, as we do for every show, but there's been an absolute deluge of them after yesterday's game. Gavin Sutton, what happened to Staley? Staley did not have a good game, did he, Brian?
He was awful, wasn't he? That one of my notes was, what happened to Staley? I've got no idea. He was awful. Absolutely. Yeah, I've never seen Joe Staley have such a bad game. Not even back into his rookie year. He was just dreadful. I don't know whether he was feeling ill or if he had some kind of knock or injury that he was carrying into the game that, you know, wasn't declared through the week. But I've never seen Joe Staley look that bad before. I've got no explanation as to why. I was going to ask the same question tonight. I don't know. The O-line themselves altogether were awful again. And that's what I said earlier. Gabbert really does need this O-line now to get better to prove that he will be the quarterback moving into the 2016 season. Because with this O-line performing as they are right now, he might not make it into the 2016 season if they continue to give up pressure and sacks as they are week after week.
We have to make it our draft priority, in my opinion. We've got to sort out that offensive line. It's just our big downfall completely. And for Gabbert, again, going back to Gabbert, not meaning to, but for him to be doing so well with that offensive line, again, credit to him. But yeah, there were some dreadful performances again. Eric Pierce. Eric Pierce. That's it.
Yeah, you don't need to say anything else other than that.
Yeah,
That actually leads us into a question from Jordan McDonald. Hello to you, Jordan. If we were to stick with Gabbert next year, which he thinks that he's deserved the position, what positions would you target in the first round of the draft? Would you go for the offensive line?
Okay, that is a moot question. Okay, I think before we can rebuild the team, we need to rebuild the organization. And until there is any sort of sign that we are going to initiate a rebuild, because this isn't a rebuild. We're not rebuilding right now. We're just playing through a season. A rebuild comes with an architecture, a system in place, a base that you lay, and an aspiration that you need to reach by a certain time. We're not at that stage. So we're just basically playing football games. That's all we're doing. So in order for us to rebuild, then we can plan and see where our weaknesses are, where our skill positions are. Will free agents want to stay here or come here? What do we need? You know, all of that is completely up in the air. Our needs in the first round could be as random as a place kicker, a punter, a safety, or a quarterback, or a running. It could be absolutely anyone or anything. Until we've got a general manager who's got a vision on how to initiate a rebuild. And then don't forget, those players need to be coached and into assigned roles and develop. Then you can start thinking about winning a few games, and then you can think about winning a championship. But we're not even at a rebuilding stage, and that won't happen until an internal change is being made to facilitate a rebuild. And current evidence suggests that it's highly unlikely to happen, certainly within during the course of this season. Maybe something might happen in the off season, but right now, you know, we need to think about rebuilding before we can think about which skill positions to fill with a draft choice.
Just jumping in there, a subject that we didn't have a chance to talk about on the show last week because it happened after we recorded the show. The sacking, the moving sideways, the reshuffling of Parag Marath, how much of a big deal is that to the front office, and how much of it is a big deal to the organisation as a whole, Brian?
Well, he's still in the building, isn't he? So if he's still the mole or still the rat, he's still going to be leaking information, isn't he? Yes, he's good at what he does in terms of organising the contracts, looking after the salary cap and things like that. Do I trust the man? Probably not now, no. These reports were out there a couple of weeks ago now that, you know, he was the leak in the organisation and that he's basically Jed's kind of right-hand man. So the fact that he's still in the organisation, to me, still stinks a bit, and he's still there to be able to get information out to whoever he sees fit to get information out to. In my mind, there needs to be wholesale changes in that front office, similar to what Deepak said there. We need to look at where we're going, who we want in there, what direction we're taking it in, what direction we want to move forward with the team, how we want to build the team, what we're going to do with the team in terms of quarterback or what type of team we're going to be. There just needs to be real wholesale changes in that front office and a new way of thinking, because it, you know, even though we're now talking coming off the back of a win and going into another week in a game where we should win again, let's be realistic about it, Cleveland Brown are garbage. They're worse than what we were 5-6 weeks ago.
Ah, but they've
Johnny
football.
Yeah, that's exactly what we should be winning. That should be another nail in their coffin and another notch on the 49ers bedpost, that one. But yeah, there does need to be massive changes in that front office for me, and I think a lot of fans are now starting to see that it's gone a bit stale with Jed and Trent. Tom Sula might get a stay of execution, but who knows, if another GM comes in, or if another, you know, if Denise and that tell Jed to get on his BMX and get out of town, then, you know, there could be massive changes from that level up. We do need to get this sorted pretty damn quick as soon as the season's finished and look at that situation.
About this leak business, okay? And Brian nailed it. Parag Marathe is still in the building, okay? And I think Jed York needs to give 49er fans just a modicum of respect for their own intelligence here. Because isn't it blatantly obvious that Jed has been telling Parag to do the leaks? Don't worry, I got you. I'll just move you upstairs or somewhere in the building out of sight. This new guy, he may well be the one that starts doing the leaks. You know, all of this is instigated by Jed York, and I think it's incredibly obvious that it's instigated by him. So, you know, Parag is literally another Tom Sula. He's just a fall guy, except Parag Marathe is worth more to Jed York than Jim Tom Sula is.
Mm.
How likely do you think there is going to be a change? I mean, you guys have been following the team a lot longer than me. I've only been for the past 5 years, really. You know, how likely is it to change? Well, that reaction's fantastic. That tells me with confidence.
Okay, look, it's Jed's toy, okay? Yeah. If he wants to throw it out the pram, he will throw it out the pram. But if he's being left alone to do with it as he pleases, he's going to be left alone to do with it as he pleases. So we're really at the mercy of somebody to actually have a word with him. Okay, and so, Jed, we need to talk to you about how you're running this organization. Because I think, you know, you've got to think about the amount of money that are involved in owning an NFL franchise. You know, and it's different to a Premier League franchise where historically, you know, soccer clubs don't make money, whereas the NFL is almost a mint to print money with. Okay, so whilst Jed is doing very good at that, he's also alienated his end-line user, which is us, the fans. And without the fans, people aren't going to buy SBLs, people aren't going to attend the games. You know, it's just by chance that all the SBLs have been sold. So all the tickets technically have been sold. So all those empty seats we see at Levi's doesn't mean anything. The only thing that means to Jed York is that maybe a quarter of the stadium is empty. So it means a quarter of the people we could have had buying beer and palak paneer or whatever the hell they sell there. And we're not getting those sales in. Okay. So in order for the team to change direction and change philosophy and establish an identity, is going to need somebody who's football savvy and understands how to build a team from the ground up. And ultimately, you know, Trent Baalke is not that person. However, the question we need to ask is, does Jed York have advisors that can actually get him in front of those sorts of people, those sorts of football-minded general managers who could have a vision, who could have a direction, who could have a blueprint or a business plan or a game plan, whatever you want to call it, that can change the momentum? Because right now, doing a U-turn with this 49er team is almost like getting an oil tanker to change direction in mid-flow. You know, it's going to take time. You're going to have people who want to come here. And dare I say, the owner is not endearing himself for people who want to be here for a long time. I mean, he just fired the most winningest coach the 49ers have had since Mooch was here. You know, just got rid of him, just like that. For what was it, philosophical differences. So you have to ask yourself, who would want to work for Jed York? And until we get the answer to that and the type of people that would be advising Jed, then the answer to your question, when's this change going to happen? Nobody knows, really.
Yeah, and just to follow back on to this conversation and back to Jordan's question, we've got a hell of a lot of cap room next season. There's no reason whatsoever why we can't go out, get ourselves either an elite pass rusher in free agency or an elite tackle or an elite guard, to if we assume that Staley and Davis are the bookends, someone to come in and re-sign Boone on the inside and put Kilgore back at centre, then we can go out and draft maybe the opposite in the top or the top middle of round one, you know, and build the team that way, because there's the money there to do it in this off season. But like Deepak says, there again, it's trying to get attract not only the off field staff to come in and manage the team situation and the owners and things like that. It's then trying to get players to come to San Francisco and to Santa Clara and to buy into that, either that new staff or the nucleus of whatever staff we're going to have left after this season. And that right now could be quite difficult.
Yeah, definitely. Look at the retirements and everything that went on in the off season before this season.
Absolutely.
You've got to think what the free agent's going to be thinking. Yeah, you can throw money at them. Perhaps for some players, money is more than, you know, the team they play for. But, well, we'll see, won't we? We'll see what happens.
Shall we get the discussion back onto the field? Because, as much as we could talk about the front office, there was kind of a game that went on as well. Simon Jowett sent in a message. He'd like to hear what our thoughts are on how the team closed out the first half. Hmm. It appeared to Simon like the management team were petrified of making a mistake and the consequences and repercussions it would bring. It was a very subdued end to the first half, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We had potentially a 2-minute drill to try and get a score before the end of the half, and we chose not to do that. And the only reason why I can guess we chose not to do that was not to either fumble the ball or throw an interception. That kind of mentality, okay, would be disastrous if you're a team that was actually competing. So that actually suggests that Tom Sula, the head coach, knows that we're just playing games because they're on a schedule. There's no actual endpoint to this. There's no actual purpose in what we're doing. Otherwise, good God, when you're playing Madden, you should want to score a winning field goal or get or nose ahead going into halftime. You want that competitive edge. And when you've got, what I think it was 1 minute and 40 seconds and two or three timeouts left, you've got to have a go, right? I mean, God, you don't call a draw play or rush up the middle on three downs. That's just stupid, you know? It's a complete affront to how the game should be played.
Yeah, when I was making bullet points for the game last night, I felt like how a journalist must feel when you've written your match report and you've got it ready to go, and then all of a sudden the team who have been getting battered for the whole game go up and score a last-minute winner, and they're like, strike a red line through that. I've got to retype the whole thing out and start again. And that was going to be like the main focus of where I was going to attack the team this week on that 1 minute 44 seconds, and just say that we had the momentum as well at that point. You know, we were getting back on we got back on the board. We were stopping the Bears moving the ball and scoring points on us. We had 1 minute 44 and it was just criminal. And again, it comes back to this same mentality of, oh, we're only down 16 points in the fourth quarter with 5 minutes left. We'll punt it and play the odds. No, you've got to try and at least go for, at least get into field goal position and get the clock down to a point where Chicago can't get the ball back, kick for the 3 points, and get in the lead before half time from a game that seemingly, after the way we started, looks like it could be getting out of sight very, very quickly. And this is part of the reason why I think that Tom Sula needs to be seriously looked at in the off season if he doesn't change from this mentality, because you can't go through the season with that mentality of punting the ball away down two scores or punting the ball away down one score when you're still within the game. And it goes back to the same yesterday with 1:44 left. There's ample time to at least get a field goal and maybe push it further. And I think that just proved at the time that the coaching staff don't still fully trust Blaine Gabbert with this offense. And hopefully the plays that he showed in that last drive in the fourth quarter and in overtime will make them reevaluate that this week and go into Cleveland, who are a team that we should destroy, and completely reevaluate it and look at how we can actually move forward and go on and win games and attack teams. Because, quite frankly, that 1 minute 44 seconds was pathetic.
It was almost as if they'd put Gabbert, sorry, on a leash. It was just so frustrating. It was like, don't throw it more than 5 yards, don't throw it more than 8 yards. And it was like, oh, and I think with what he did at the end of the game, will have made the coaching staff sit back and go, oh, hang on a minute. I think he did, well, I think the play, certainly his rushing play, his touchdown, I think was just to prove a point to them, to say, look, you know, you've had a leash on me. I know we're talking about the first half, you had a leash on me, but look what I can do.
I agree with you, because you've got to look at that, those play calls that were made towards the end of the first half. You've got to look at it from Gabbert's point of view. Basically, that is saying to Blaine Gabbert, you're not going to be able to, you're not capable of driving this team, 40 yards in 2 minutes with two timeouts, for us to kick a field goal. We don't think you're good enough to do that. You've got to look at it from Gabbert's point of view and think, well, actually, I could maybe march the team upfield and get a field goal. Or maybe I could even get them a touchdown. Because if that happened, you know who's going to get a credit for that? Blaine Gabbert is, and quite rightly too. Yeah. And he's been denied the opportunity to show, again, how good he really is, because people want to play. You know, there's nothing wrong in playing high-percentage football. Okay, and that bread and butter staple is fine, especially when we're in the flux that we're in. But that just shows a complete lack of distrust in somebody who actually deserves trust. And again, I think that was a bit of a finger in the air to Blaine Gabbert by the coaching staff.
Deepak, that leads into a great question from Gavin Sutton, actually. Tom Sula's getting a lot of criticism for the play calling. However, he gets no credit for the plays that won the game. Is it that we don't believe that he's calling those plays and that it's Gabbert doing it on his own?
We don't know who is calling the plays. Is it Christ or is it Tom Sula who has the ultimate say? Do we know?
I think the the plays that won us the game, they weren't called, not at all. Look at the call, all the plays that were called before, and then that. Why would you all of a sudden call those plays? I don't think they were called by him at all, or called full stop. I think they were just moments of magic.
I mean, I want to just clarify something here. I've come down a bit hard on Jimmy T today, and I am actually a Tom Sula apologist. I like him. I think under the right conditions, he could be a good NFL coach. You know, this could be a good learning experience. I'd love him for him to be our NFL coach, as a lot of our players like him. But, Gavin, you're right. You know, he does deserve the credit when he's done something right. But we've come to a point with this season now where so much has gone wrong. There's very little that's gone right for people to give him credit about. And Tom Sula was almost the Holy Grail in that we all knew he's one of us, he's one of the guys, we like him, you know, we mustn't get down on him. But no, everyone's fair game this season for critique, and Jimmy T is no exception. So yeah, he does deserve the nod when he's made the right play, but when you're trying to grind out a game and go in without scoring when you've got 1:40 and 2 timeouts, whatever left, you need to have a think about what you're doing when that starts to happen.
And they start a lot of the games really badly, don't they? Whatever their first dozen scripted plays are pathetic. They're next to useless because we're not scoring in the first quarter. So whatever film we're watching and whatever study we're doing into how to start a game, they need to scrap that idea straight away and think of something else, because whatever they're doing, whatever they're watching, is clearly incorrect and wrong, because I've never seen a team start so badly all season. This isn't a thing that we've been just sort of talking about in the last couple of weeks. This has been all season. We still haven't scored the first quarter touchdown on offense.
Yes, that was one of my big, big points I was going to raise with you anyway. I'm glad you raised it, Brian. What on earth? You turn the game on, you sit down, you get ready to watch the game, and you're like, oh, I haven't turned up again. And then, obviously, by the end of the game, it's a different story. But, yeah, just the no offensive touchdown in the first quarter for the whole season, am I right in saying?
Yep.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Wasn't it something like 5 yards total offense in the first quarter and something like 4 yards total offense in the third quarter?
Yeah, that's why he's getting a lot of the criticism, because you can't rely on a couple of big plays every week to bail you out and to win games. You need to be consistent through the whole game for as much as possible. The reality of that situation is that's really blooming hard to go out and give 4 quarters of perfect football where you're constantly moving the chains and keeping the scoreboard ticking over. But they need to really look at how they're starting games, and they also need to start looking at throwing more on first down than what they do, because it's way too predictable. And this isn't on just this current coaching staff. This goes back to even the previous coaching staff under Jim Harbaugh. You knew that on probably 90% of the first downs, we were running the ball. And this also comes back to what we've previously been talking about in what's the direction of the team. And we know that on Tom Sula's first press conference, where he kind of stuttered and erred and ummed his way through it, Trent Baalke come out and said, well, somewhere in there, I think he said we're going to run the football. So you know the direction that Trent Baalke wants to move the team in and to be a running team. But the reality of the situation, again, is that's not always the way that it needs to be. And unfortunately, we do need to adapt, and we do need to move off of script and from, maybe the way that Trent wants to run the team. Because if you haven't got the O-line, which we haven't, you need to work with what we've got. And right now, what we've got and what's working is what we're seeing with Blaine Gabbert. Take what the defense give you. Take the dump-offs. Use the likes of Drone and Miller, McDonald, Selleck, these guys, Blake Bell. In the same way, again, I hate to keep going back to it, but in the same way that what Alex Smith did from probably that 2011 season on, he took what he was given. And we built on that, and we became a very good team off the back of that.
I sort of mentioned on the game day thread that whoever will win this game will be as a result of the other team making a gargantuan mistake. And I think Chicago, with the bad hold and the bad snap and the hold that couldn't quite work in time for the kick to be delivered, was the gargantuan mistake. You know, and you have to ask yourself this question. Was this the same team that drove Arizona so close the week before? because we lost this because Chicago's special teams couldn't execute a snap, hold, and a kick because the kick was a gimme, right? It was almost an extra point. It was an extra point, you know. All things being equal, yeah, missed field goals are a part of the game, but think about it for a second, you know. That was a gimme. They made a gargantuan error that allowed us to win, you know. We were dead and buried when they were kicking that field goal. We were finished.
Was it particularly windy in Chicago? Because I don't understand how we missed that. I was ready to turn over to red zone to watch the rest of the
it
game.
Didn't look like a clean. Yeah, didn't look like a clean hold to me. The commentator said it was a clean hold, but that ball did not look at the right angle for kicking in real time. That was the first thing I saw was when I looked at that ball. I thought, oh, that's not how it should be. And he put it wide, and when the game caller said, oh, well, that was a perfect hold, and I thought, well, no, it wasn't. If you take a look at that replay, you'll actually see that wasn't a very good hold at all.
It looked like a low snap, and the guy couldn't get the hold efficiently and on time, you know, because he hasn't got the time to do it, you know. This is like a reflex these guys do. And I think that was the reason why we won the game, is because they missed a routine field goal that wasn't from very far away. Don't forget this bloke, what's his name called? He'd nailed him from 40 plus and 50 plus before in the game. Yeah. So you would think from 30 odd yards, he'd sink it.
You're on about the clean hold. I'm sure that the commentator said that goal was the long snapper was a free agent that they'd signed this week. So perhaps that's why they weren't completely in tune or any of it. But yeah, I just couldn't believe it was missed, but it was missed, and we won the game. Fantastic.
I want to say hello to a new Twitter contributor, at So Locked In. He asked a question about Gavinic.
quality.
It's catching. It's contagious.
That's going in the outtakes reel. He asked a question about Gabbert. We've already answered lots of questions about Gabbert. It was, do you believe we should draft a QB? We've said we simply don't know what to draft right now. A question that I wanted to get to, because it's a brilliant question, before we go to the two-minute drill. Andrew Mitchell, if we were in the NFC least, we would be one game off the top. Are the 49ers as bad as we think they are, or are they an average team in a very tough division?
We're definitely an average team in a tough division. I mean, the Cardinals are playing fantastic. The Seahawks, they seem a bit stop and start, but Russell Wilson's carrying them through on his own lately. So, yeah, I think we're definitely an average team. I don't think we're a poor team. I mean, only the rest of the season will tell us what record we end up with. But, you know, I'm not certain, but I think we definitely should win this coming weekend. If we don't, things have got to be looked at again. But at the minute, I'm filled with confidence after yesterday's performance, that's for certain.
Would you have said the same thing, say, 7 weeks ago?
No, absolutely not.
Not at all, no.
I think despite the exodus of players that left us in the off-season, you know, what was left still wasn't a bad team. And I think the talent level that we had is certainly far better than the record that this team has suggests. So, yeah, we are in a very, very difficult division. And if we're in the NFC East, we don't know. But I do think we're punching far below our weight. When if we'd been punching above it, we could even be entertaining a wild card spot. But I still think we are severely underperforming with the level of talent that we've got.
All right, guys, it is time to head into our two-minute drill. Are you all ready?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Deepak, Tom Sula, hit, bust, or jury still out?
Bust, unfortunately. Not his fault, but bust.
James, Gabbert, hit, bust, or jury still out?
Jury still out. He hasn't played enough games.
Brian, can we still get in on the hunt for a wild card?
Well, even the most optimistic of myself will think that we can probably get to 7-9 this year, but I don't think that's going to be anywhere near close enough to get into a wild card, unfortunately.
Deepak, trade up or trade for extra picks?
After what I've said about the draft, it doesn't matter. Trade up. Always up.
Okay. Yep. James, will or should Gabbert be allowed to scramble more?
I think he should. on the evidence of yesterday's game, I think he definitely should. He looked more controlled. Well, like Sal said earlier, he looks more controlled, in my opinion, than Kaepernick when he rushes. Try some more. I mean, perhaps try the read option. If it doesn't come off, don't do it again, but you've got to give him a chance.
Brian, is it time to bench Ellington? That's my pet hate at the moment.
G'day, mate. My name's Jared Hayne, and I'm your new punt returner.
Hey! Deepak, should we still go for wins, or should we start working out the third stringers?
We win. Do you think Navarro Bowman came back from injury just so that we could just coast it? No, we go for wins.
Amen.
Good shout. James, onto the NFL in the hole. Has the Panthers' weakness been exposed?
No, I think the way Newton's playing, he just looks like Superman at the minute.
Brian, are the Jags on the way up?
Absolutely, the Jags are on the way up. Two absolutely fantastic wide receivers, quarterback who could become the new Blaine Gabbert. Bortles at times hasn't looked particularly great, but absolutely, other than their uniforms, the Jaguars look pretty good.
I'm going to slip my last question in there for Deepak. Is Brady's crown starting to slip in Foxborough?
Well, no, I don't think his crown is slipping in Foxborough. In Foxborough, he can do no wrong. He's a god in Foxborough. So his crown is actually welded in permanently forever and ever, and a shoe-in for Canton, and quite right too. He deserves it.
Yep.
Time to head into our good, bad, and ugly segment, where we each pick a good point, a bad point, and an ugly point from yesterday's game. We'll go with our guest co-host first. James, what was your good point from yesterday's game?
I bet you can't guess what it is. It's Blaine Gabbert. It's got to be Gabbert. Not just his rushing skills that I have mentioned several times and got me very excited during the game. His arm strength as well. And his accuracy, I think from his first game to last night, his accuracy to me has improved. Blaine Gabbert, good point, definitely.
Brian, what about yours?
I'm going to give a little bit of love to someone who's been kind of across all three of these sections in the last few weeks. Pinion, 48-yard average on his punts. In the kind of game that we were in Sunday night, that's exactly what we need from a punter, especially when he was drafted in the fifth round of the NFL draft. This guy consistently gave us decent field position all night. Unfortunately, the... well, we might come on to this in a second, actually. But unfortunately, his coverage units did let him down. So his net average maybe wasn't as good as it should have been. But yeah, Bradley Pinion had a good game. Keep it in the good column, Bradley.
And Deepak?
Good. Absolutely no doubt about it. Blaine Gabbert.
For all the same reasons as James?
Yeah, absolutely. He won us the football game.
I'm going to go with Sean Drone. This guy has come onto the team and been... almost a revelation. He just doesn't seem to do anything wrong. 13 runs yesterday for 36 yards, and then 5 catches for 50 yards on the receiving as well. He just seems to be a really good pickup for us, Sean Jones. So that's my good.
Gotcha.
Let's have a look at the bads. James, what was your bad?
Eric Pierce and the O-line. Again, it's just consistently... all the way throughout this season, our O-line struggled. Staley as well, unfortunately. I love the guy, but yesterday, I don't know. I'll say, personally, I think he looked weaker to me. Everything I've looked back on, he definitely looked weak. He didn't look as strong as he normally did. Perhaps he wasn't well. Perhaps he was injured. We'll never know. But yeah, the O-line, Eric Pierce and Joe Staley.
Brian, what's your bad?
I think the lack of pass rush again, this is another unit that kind of moves between the good and the bad for me. We've pointed out in the past that in the past sort of few weeks, actually, how good they've been. I think they lapsed again on Sunday night in Chicago, and they were kind of nowhere to be seen for large chunks of that game, unfortunately. And again, hopefully this is a unit that can move back up into the good column. If they don't move up into the good column next week, then we've got problems.
Deepak?
Bad. I'm going to call somebody out here. What's his name? Guy with a French-sounding surname.
Lemonnier.
Need I say more? He just dropped something that was literally given to him in his hand. And for the life of me, he couldn't figure out a way of how to hold it. And that, to me, is more about attitude than anything else, because a defensive player has got to be a ball hawk. Every single one of them has to expect that thing to come to them at any given moment. That kind of incompetency could have... It's so bad, I don't want to say anymore.
It was worse than Prox last week.
Oh, so much more worse than Prox. So much more worse than Prox.
Yeah.
My bad is our attrition rate. We are losing players left, right, and center in every game. We almost lost Navarro Bowman to concussion protocol, but he managed to sort of wangle his way out of that one, I think. Did we lose Vance McDonald as well in this game?
Yeah.
I think we did, didn't we?
Yeah, Ian Williams.
I don't know whether it's game prep or poor coaching or what, but we are losing players left, right, and centre. By the time the end of the season comes in, we're going to be drafting in Shane Falco from the replacements. It's getting that bad. It really is. Let's go to the uglies. Back to James. What was your ugly?
The kicks. Special teams. Just special teams play in general. I'm not a fan of Ellington. I'm all aboard the Hein playing. But, yeah, just... I don't know. He found his wheels on a couple of runs, but he should have done a lot better with, special team. That's what I mean. The kicks as well, the missed kicks, especially the one that they missed. But I suppose I shouldn't really complain about that.
Brian, what was your ugly?
It has to be that woman at 44 before half time. Again, it was something that was completely unacceptable, and we should look to eradicate that at all costs moving forward for the rest of the season.
That's a good shout, Deepak.
Ugly coaching attitude and that awful, horrific, horrendous series of plays when we still had time to score before the second half started. Before the first half closed.
Myself, Ellington again, and I'm going to keep on saying Ellington until he is no longer on the field. I've had some stats passed to me from yesterday's game and overall. Ellington punt returns 3 yesterday for 0 yards, 2 fair catches. One of them was on the 10-yard line. Ellington has fielded 22 punts this season. Fair caught 11 of them. Of the other 11, he has 61 yards total, 5.5 yards returned. Hein, by comparison, has fair caught 5 out of 13 punts. And on the 80 returned, it was for 76 yards. So my ugly is Ellington yet again.
Hey, devil's advocate, if it wasn't for Ellington yesterday, we might not have won that game in overtime.
Don't say that. You're putting a fly in the ointment now. I've got a couple more stats here that I just wanted to put out there before we end the show. Bowman's 13 tackles in the game lifts him to second in the season, standings behind Dequell Jackson. We didn't talk about Navarro Bowman at all during this show. He did have a decent game yesterday, didn't he?
Yeah, he's an absolute leader. He's just a beast. He's just frightening. He's a leader, isn't he? He's just intelligence. And I think he just affects the players around him.
Drone's TD, first rushing TD since week 5, which is quite a shock, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but like I said last week, I think Drone is now in a position where we can just use him and run him into the ground, because that's what he's here for. He's determined and looks good enough to be here next season. So make the most of him this year, give him this audition for next season, and use him in the best of our ability. He's certainly coming useful in the passing game, and he's definitely going to have, well, I think he's definitely going to have a really nice game moving forward next Sunday in Cleveland. And he's going to have a point to prove, because Cleveland were his last team that he got let go from, I believe. So he's definitely going to be up for that one.
I think he's played on that many teams. He's going to be just an advantage to us. He'll be able to tell us the weaknesses of half the teams in the league, but looks away and green.
Last one, Dawson's extra point miss was our first miss since 2003, when we missed 3 with 3 different kickers. So that's our advanced stats. That is it for this episode of the show. Thanks to Gavin and Kat for the 2-minute drill questions. Thanks to our new show researcher, Mark Lyon, who compiled all those stats for us. Much appreciated, Mark. Thanks to AudioNautics.com for the music. The discussions will continue on Twitter at Frequency49 and on Facebook. Search the Frequency49 show and feel free to join in those discussions. If I haven't asked your question out today, I do apologise. We simply didn't have the time to get them out, so we will discuss them on Facebook and stuff. We'll be back later this week with a preview of the Week 14 game against the Cleveland Browns. It is time to say goodbye, boys.
Bye.
Goodbye, good night, guys.
Good night.
On behalf of Brian, Deepak and James, I've been Paul McDonald, you've been the audience, and this has been the Frequency 49 show. Bye for now.